Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the Senate Committee on Healthcare, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy. We have four bills to consider today, and with that, I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 1506. We're going to be considering the Dash 4 amendments, and if...
Is anybody here for the floors?
Remley.
Blankenship.
Come forward and just describe, oh yeah, and Marion Blankenship, just explain what happens with the Dash 4s, and then the committee will just decide what they would like to do.
Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marion Blankenship. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Pacific Source. So Dr. Robin Henderson came in and spoke with you and provided testimony on Friday, and I think that she walked through sort of in some detail what the Dash 4s accomplish. So I'll just give you a really brief overview. And essentially, they convene a mental health clinical advisory group that would take a look at investigating sort of voluntary clinical algorithms and different approaches to managing patient prescribing and care. It would also direct the OHA to provide mental health data by July 1st and essentially provide it in such a way that it's available in real time, so within maybe 24 to 48 hours, and also in a format that is actually usable. And then lastly, it would allow the Mental Health Advisory Committee to come back to the legislature and essentially provide a report on what they have learned through their investigations and perhaps some recommendations.
Great. Any questions for this panel? Colleagues, if you'll look at the Dash 4 fiscal impact, I was concerned there since on page 3 of the Dash 4s that there might be a problem with a fiscal statement, but it did say that the OHA, it would have minimal fiscal impact because they plan to give that information out already. Senator Bates, we are on Senate Bill 1506. We're only considering the Dash 4 amendments, which forms a work group.
Yep.
Only. And there's a fiscal statement that says minimal impact statement. And am I in work session or public hearing? Did I open a work session? So I need to know, I've been hearing conflicting feedback from this committee, and I really, before we go forward, need to hear from you whether we can send it to the floor.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I know that there were some concerns about the bill in its original form. Do you have any sense if there is still opposition to the Dash 4s from those who had those concerns?
At this point, there doesn't appear to be any opposition. I don't see pharma. Yes, I do. Okay. Would you like to make a statement, please? Jim Gardner?
Madam Chair, Jim Gardner for pharma. We have no position on the Dash 4s.
Okay. Yes, Senator Cruz.
You know, I think what they're driving at is really good stuff here. I would prefer that we're doing it in a more global sense. This is the sort of information everybody's going to need. And my fear is that this is going to have OHA focus on one area, potentially, when I would suggest most CCOs would want to have this sort of information. I don't like the narrow focus.
And I view it as I don't think that we could pass a bill that had a broader focus than this is right now. I truly believe that this is uncharted, and I think there would be a lot of opposition to that. It is just a pilot. Any other?
Well, know, Madam Chair, in response to that, as we're moving into this new regime, this is the sort of stuff OHA should be doing for the community groups. I mean, quite honestly. And I think if they get to the point where they're getting real-time information for one community, it should be available for all communities.
Can we ask the proponents a few questions?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Senator Cruz brought up a good point. Real-time information is important here. We're trying to find out if these people are taking the medications, mm-hmm. taking them properly and taking them regularly. Without standing in front of them and watch them take them, of course we can't do that, and someday we may get to that point in certain cases, but I had a talk with Tom Burns last week. I never finished the conversation. If they do it for your group, can they do it statewide at the same time? Once that program is in place, is it available to everybody across the state?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Bates, you know, our understanding is that the OHA really does have every intention of trying to be able to get this data for all plans across the state. And, you know, we allowed them in that intention. I think that our desire here is to just put, to underscore the legislature's priority at some level, that this is really important data to be able to provide to plans so that they can actually go about the business of trying to better integrate and coordinate care. My understanding is that the OHA has had some initial conversations with plans about what that might look like. What we're asking here is to essentially build some accountability in and ask them to have that data ready by July 1st, 2012. I think it would certainly behoove them to be looking at a statewide solution as they're doing that work. But I can't speak for OHA.
If I might add, Chair Monis Anderson, for the record, Elizabeth Remley with Vox Public Relations Public Affairs Pacific Source is my client. The other part of this particular set of amendments is that the data that comes to Central Oregon Health Council will be studied, and the report back to the legislature could inform the legislature how CCOs might use the data about mental health drugs to coordinate care. The OHA is working to provide data to all plans, and they have said that they can do that. However, Central Oregon Health Council is in a unique position to look at that data and how it coordinates care using the data, because it's already coordinating care for its Medicaid population.
Hello, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
So if you get the information starting in July, and you have the study group going, are they going to be able to report back how if you've actually implemented some of that and what the results of that implementation has been?
Chair Bonas Anderson and Senator Bates, we would have some fairly early preliminary data. I think that, in its earlier iteration, this bill was really looking at some different opportunities. And so the clinical advisory committee would be really looking at sort of methodologies and different approaches. I don't think that we would have limited data at the very best 6 months worth. But I still think that in terms of looking at some of these alternative approaches and developing voluntary treatment algorithms, these could be potentially generalized to other CCO organizations around the state, so that not everybody is having to reinvent the same work at the CCO level. That this would just enable us to have some early results and some early ideas that could then be applied elsewhere.
Well, Madam Chair,
yes.
This is really truly a pilot program that can bring back some information in February or March next year. There might be some value in it, even though it's a local program, because Senator Cruz is correct. I think doing a local program seems a little strange. I could see it coming out of something like OHSU statewide or a study for that, but if you're actually going to implement something in your group and try to study the outcomes of that, that has a lot more value to me than just setting up another work group.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm trying to ask you here.
Senator Cruz.
Okay. You know, I can understand potentially requiring the health authority to do something as far as getting new information. I still don't understand why I mean, the Central Oregon Health Council has the ability right now to create any advisory group they want. Why we have to put that advisory group in statute is what I don't understand. Now, the portion of the bill requiring OHA to do something, I can support. It's just the whole concept that we are putting in statute an advisory group for a local organization, and I think that's what's going over the top.
Chair Monis-Anderson and Senator Cruz, I understand that and appreciate that. I understand that they certainly could convene that group at any point. I think that what made sense to us was really the opportunity to actually have that group do work that would be more broadly applicable beyond just Central Oregon and then come back to the legislature and actually report as would be requested through the bill. We understand that they certainly can undertake that work without it being in statute.
Madam Chair, if the Central Oregon Health Council created this advisory group and they did good work, whether there's statute or not, we would welcome that report back to the Legislative Assembly. It's just, I think, you know, I mean, we're setting up CCOs to be local organizations, locally driven, and here on the very front end, we are mandating something to one of those local groups. I know you're requesting it, but we're still mandating it. I think it's a bad precedent.
Yes, Senator Shields, and then Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, I think what the proponents are trying to do is to set the framework for doing something and moving this along when they couldn't get exactly what they would have preferred. And I certainly appreciate Senator Cruz's concerns, but I'm comfortable with it if it's your intention to send it on to Ways and Means or to the floor. You can count on my votes to do that.
Senator Morris.
Well, I share some of the concerns that Senator Cruz has. I don't know. Is there a precedent for the legislature telling local organizations such as this, as a council, telling them what to do?
If I may, again, Chair Monis-Anderson, Senator Morse, the Central Oregon Health Council is actually created in statute in order to allow the folks who sit on the Central Oregon Health Council board to meet, because otherwise they would not have been able to meet, because it includes elected officials and other folks who might have been subject to anti-competitive stuff otherwise. It was created in Senate Bill 204 last session, and so there is actually, that is the precedent under which this particular group might take place.
Okay. And Madam Chair, I had issues with that bill too, because in Douglas County, the county officials are at the table. In every place else, they're at the table. Why Central Oregon needs to be different, I really, truly do not understand. Because we have private entities, not-profit entities, and government entities meeting in your part of the state as well. So, you know, I objected to putting that in statute as well. It's like, you know, for some reason, Deschutes can't do it the way everybody else is doing it, and that does bother me.
Chair, excuse me, Monis-Anderson and Senator Cruz. So I would just bring us back to kind of the two component parts of the bill that you have in front of you, and really they are two parts. The one is around the clinical mental health clinical advisory group. The other is around real-time data and really providing some direction from the legislature to OHA to providing this data in a timely and usable format. Again, with the hope that the work that they do to achieve that would be transferable to plans throughout the state.
All right. Well, we don't have a motion. And if there's no motion.
Madam Chair, just to see how the committee feels in this. I share Senator Cruz's concerns, but there is one part of this bill that looks pretty good, and that's getting that information and then and possibly even acting on it and getting an idea of what's going on. And that had value. That strikes me as a pilot program. The rest of this is sort of, frankly, you could have done it by yourself, I think. I don't think you need a bill. But the other part would be making it assured that you got that information, that there's no slippage, that by July 1st you really get it. So I would go ahead and make a motion, see what the how the committee feels on this. They may not support that motion, but I'd move Senate Bill 1506 to the floor with a two-pass recommendation, and that's the Dash 4s.
But first we need to adopt the amendments.
Dash 4s, I'm sorry. I move the Dash 4 amendments in the Senate Bill 1506.
Senator Bates moves the Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 1506. Is there any further discussion? Yeah. Yes, Senator Morris.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I share these concerns, but I don't think my concerns are carry sufficient weight to vote no against the bill.
It goes the ways it means, so but there's no reason to say
it.
Does it go the ways it means?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear what you said. I'm a little stuffed up in the head.
Well, I should speak up. I share the concerns about that have been offered. But for me, I don't think they rise to the point where I would vote no on the bill, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, this bill does go to Ways and Means.
No. Well,
that's not real.
No, that's not real. Unfortunately. Yeah.
No, it does have a Ways and Means referral by prior reference.
Okay.
And however, you do have a fiscal statement, and the fiscal does lay it out on the Dash 4s, but it does also say that the bill will have a minimal fiscal impact on the health authority. So
and the
there's a little bit of gray area in all of it.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess my comfort level at this point would be to send it to Ways and Means, and maybe the potential that down there could be amended so the Central Oregon Health Council can go ahead and create their board by themselves, but we require the work from OHA. And I'm getting nods. So, and Senator Bates said that would be something he would be willing to consider doing in his subcommittee, correct?
Right, we'd have to
look at it a little more, I understand. But
no, I think I'm just trying to think how to do it. Yeah, I think it's doable. Okay. So, Madam Chair, would you accept a motion?
Oh, wait.
That's the motion I'm going to make.
Any further discussion on the amendments?
We're doing the fourth right now.
I know.
Okay.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chairman Sanderson?
Aye. Amendment adopted.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1506 as amended by the Dash 4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1506 with the Dash 4 amendments to the floor with a due pass with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any further discussion?
I think so.
Yeah.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chairman Sanderson?
Aye. Motion carries.
Madam Chair, thank you for the consideration. I think we can get what everybody's after here.
Thank you.
So.
Thank you, committee. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1506 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1509. Colleagues, there are two amendments that were brought to me, the Dash 12s and the Dash 13s. Is that what you have?
Mm-hmm. It is.
12s and the 13s. Okay. These are the, and if we could have Paul Cosgrove and George Okulich. Will you describe the differences between the Dash 12s and the Dash 13s?
Yes, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove representing the Oregon Dental Hygiene Association. Both of them on page 2 and page 5 have identical language on the volunteer dental, volunteer hygienist that I think you heard that both organizations support. And this is simplified language as we discussed at the last work session hearing.
And just to let the committee know, this is a total gut and stuff. There's nothing to do with massage therapists. There's nothing to do with the health authority, CCO's health insurance exchange. Okay. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The dash 12s and 13s are also identical on page 6 with respect to lines 15, 16, with the addition of the word and locations.
No, I think I know.
In both versions. What's different is the dash 13s also have the new lines 12, 13, and 14 on page 6. And this is the issue that we discussed before, where these were the standards that the board applied in a past occasion in determining whether two dental hygienists could practice in rural Lane County, Upper Mackenzie, River Valley, and in Oak Ridge. And through a variety of permutations, which we also discussed in our last hearing, we're hoping that you will put these in statute to eliminate that concern about that issue in the future. The chair had asked me to specify what can happen, where can people practice under federally designated health professional shortage areas for dental care. They are federal guidelines. They're actually implemented by the Oregon Health Authority. And they take into account a number of factors, including the number of providers and other kinds of health indications for oral health care. Currently, certain areas of the state, geographic areas, primarily very rural areas, are designated as shortage areas for dental providers as the whole geography. And those are the loosely populated counties in eastern and central Oregon that you could all imagine, Grant, Wheeler-Gilliam, et cetera. Most of the rest of the state, although not all of it, is also designated as a shortage area for oral health care for either migrant farm workers or for low-income people, but not for other kinds of people. So what this would allow is one of these dental hygienists in one of those other areas of the state, if she or he limited their practice to those two population groups, could practice independently, but not with respect to the general population. So that's the distinction that I was hoping the committee could hear, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about that if the chair desires.
Well, I first would like to have Mr. Okulich tell us your position on the 12s and the 13s.
Chair Monis-Anderson, for the record, my name is George Okulich, here on behalf of the Oregon Dental Association. Our position is we support the Dash 12 Amendment. We do not support the Dash 13 Amendment. We sort of came into this supporting sort of the original Dash 6 and the Dash 7s because when the problem was before us about the two women that Mr. Cosgrove mentioned, that they were prevented from working with the words locations being deleted. We were part of the mediation with Senate Bill 738. That was not part of the, I think that was an inadvertent mistake, and we wanted to come forward and say, let's correct that. And so we basically said, look, we support that. We don't support the 13 because we do see this additional language as kind of sort of a new policy. You know, it really starts to expand where these expanded practice dental hygienists can work. So our position is look, this was, you know, our intention in this short session was to try to fix the mistake, go back to the way things were a year and a half ago without kind of having a bigger discussion about when and where the expanded practice dental hygienists could work.
Have you talked at all at the board regarding when we develop our CCOs, the impact of needing dental services in remote areas at all? Have you addressed that?
Chair Moss-Anderson, I couldn't tell you what the board has discussed. I know Patrick is here. Maybe he could shed some light on that. I don't know.
Madam Chair, I'd also be glad to add my two cents. I don't attend board meetings, but I get the tapes of every board meeting and listen to them diligently, and I think it's fair to say the board is always concerned about access to care, and that's why they approved the two original people in those rural communities. I don't recall any recent discussion, at least, about the specific CCO issue that you've mentioned.
So from your point of view, Mr. Cosgrove, this addition in the Dash 13s will not expand where a dental hygienist can work.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it will not expand where a dental hygienist can work beyond what the board has already authorized in using these criteria to approve two people already, that being the two people that we've mentioned, which was an approval done a year and a half or so ago.
And that was population. What were the two criteria?
The two criteria was that the board looked at health manpower shortage areas, and it looked at the rural tax credit criteria for where dentists could get a tax credit, not dental hygienists, but dentists can get a tax credit based on the fact they're either practicing in what's called a frontier county, which again is those sparsely populated counties in eastern Oregon, or in a town of less than 5,000 that is more than 25 miles away from any full-time provider of dental care.
And we did go because I was concerned about this expanding, especially in the metro area. And so we went to revenue, and because that it would have had an impact on revenue. And when they looked at the language of the bill, this would have no impact on the revenue. So the interpretation is that it would not expand where a dental hygienist can practice. Patrick, do you want to say a word?
For the record, my name is Patrick Brotz. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Dentistry. The board, when they adopted the two areas, the Oak Ridge and the Upper McKenzie, they did not discuss specifically the rural tax issue. They did talk a little bit about the designated HPSAs, but basically they had
the health,
whatever they're specifically called.
Professional shortage areas,
I think what it's referred to. They did specifically get letters from those two individuals who asked to work in those areas, and primarily because there are no dental services or no dental offices in those areas, and the committee did recommend those to the board, and the board did adopt those two areas. Regarding the other ones, as Mr. Cosgrove has mentioned to you, or maybe mentioned to you previously, the ODHA has petitioned the board to add those as locations, and the board accepted that petition yesterday and referred it to its rules committee. So that's where it stands.
Okay, further discussion. We're in work session.
I would prefer, Madam Chair, the dash 12. Dealing with this other issue at a later date. I don't like being an adjudicator between dividing these markets.
I think there are others that, you know.
Do you prefer the 12s or 13s?
The 12.
With me. I actually prefer the ones that had massage therapists in it. Yeah. I'd much rather see my massage therapist than go see a dentist. I mean,
well, I would like to see the dash 13s just because it just very clearly states, rather than having a dental hygienist to persistently go before the board for each individual area that they may want to practice, if it's truly stated the way it is with the dash 13, then it isn't really hidden in some minutes. It's actually in the public so that the dental hygienist could actually see where they could practice.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 13 amendment to Senate Bill 1509.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 13 amendments into Senate Bill 1509. Is there any further discussion?
That is the massage therapist part. Right?
No, that can be arranged.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
No.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Amendment adopted. Dash 13 amendments adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1509 as amended by the dash 13 amendments to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves the dash Senate Bill 1509 with the dash 13 amendments to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
No.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Morris Anderson?
Aye. Motion carries, and I'd like to carry that bill. Close the work session on Senate Bill 1509 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1570. And colleagues, we are only considering the Dash 3 amendments.
We already adopted
the Dash 3. So we're in work session. Basically, what the Dash 3 amendments did was add a sunset to it, even though when you read the amendment, you have no clue that that really did add a sunset, but that is what it did. And Anne Marie told me that. All right. Is there any...
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1570 as amended by the Dash 3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation and request a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 1570 as amended with the Dash 3s to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. And I close the work session on Senate Bill 1570. And do we have to go into a public hearing? Because we have an amendment. Yeah, I guess so. I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1522, but we have Jennifer Pratt. Do you want to come forward?
We did have a public hearing because we had to go back on the
6th. Yeah, we did have a public hearing on the 6th. We really didn't need a public hearing on this one. Well, we can have Doug Reeks come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, through record, I'm Doug Riggs on behalf of the Oregon Primary Care Association. We really appreciate you giving us a little opportunity here to explain the amendments that we've crafted for Senate Bill 1522. Jennifer is going to explain them, but essentially we took into consideration the input that we received from members of this committee and other advocates and department folks, and Jennifer is here to explain the new approach that we've taken.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jennifer Pratt, and this version is pretty much a simplified version of what you received before. It is shifting the emphasis from requiring the CCOs to measure and adjust for psychological and social barriers to health to asking the OHA to convene a work group to do it. As Doug said, we received really good input from a broad array of sources, and it became clear that none of us yet knows how to measure and adjust for these. It doesn't even look across the country like people know yet. And so this work group would be convened to try to identify how to do it, a methodology here in Oregon, and jumpstart, fast track this process because it is... It would be a significant burden if each CCO was asked to do this rather than it being a collective across the state. And we've been adjusting for medical severity for years. Bruce Goldberg told me himself that this is something that MCOs demand, and it feels like given the complexity of these patients and the cost of providing care for creating the health outcomes that we're all seeking to achieve in order to create equities, health equities across the board, that it would behoove us to measure and adjust also for these psychological and social barriers, behavioral, socioeconomic barriers versus just medical severity. So that's what we are proposing in this in the Dash 2.
And I always liked the illustration that one of the people that came to testify in, it's one thing when you're giving health care to a diabetic who has family support or even lives in a home with a roof over their head.
Yes.
Versus a diabetic who is homeless and has mental disorders.
That's
so,
right.
And that's what this bill is trying to focus on that issue. Now, I assume, Dr. Bates, in the conversations with CCOs, that is this part of what you envision as being a part of what the CCOs...
Well, this is really what CCOs are all about. I mean, really.
Right.
You're talking about coordinating mental health, drug, and alcohol treatment for that, you know, 20% of the population that eats up 80% of the dollars. Those are primarily people with chronic illnesses. Not all of them, but it's usually people with chronic illnesses with a mental health or a drug and alcohol problem. Mm-hmm. So they can't take part in the health system. They just can't do it. There are others, of course, who, bolt of lightning thing, you get leukemia, you have a terrible accident. Those things happen. They're very expensive, too. But for the most part, this is what we're talking about. I'm just trying to get my arms around why we're calling them out to do something that obviously needs to be done. We know that's going to be one of the challenges.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I think that's a really excellent question. Here's the way I think of it. All the CCOs need to incorporate this kind of thinking and a methodology to be able to calculate for it. The problem is we're at the very beginning of trying to figure out what the methodology is. So either we can push that out to the CCO and say, this is difficult, there's not really an awful lot of evidence, you go do it, or we can help them by creating some sort of a work group at the state level, which will work with CCOs and try to come up with a methodology that they'll be able to use. So I really view this as an opportunity with the CCOs as they're getting off the ground have a lot on their plate. The OHA is going to have a lot on their plate. What we're offering here is let's put together a group of smart people who've done this before to try to come up with a methodology that they could then share with CCOs around the state, almost like a learning collaborative to a certain extent. You know, this is, in my mind, this is where the rubber meets the road. These are the most vulnerable populations that we're talking about. They're the most expensive. And having a way that we can calculate the complexities and build that into a reimbursement system, in my mind, is one of the key ways to reduce long-term costs and improve health outcomes. But it's if we have a scattershot approach where every CCO is doing it differently, that's, in my mind, not as efficient as if we come up with some unified methodology that we could apply to or be available for CCOs to apply it on a statewide basis.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. I'm having a little hard time getting my mind around this. We're talking in terms of a global budget and local jurisdictions that understand their population, they understand the needs. But within that global budget, determinations will be made in terms of where allocations will go. Is this the first step down the road of the state of Oregon prescribing specifically to CCOs how they're going to allocate their global
budget?
And that's where I see it going.
I appreciate your, Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Morris, I appreciate your comment and your question in there. It's this is really just, you know, we don't even collect data for these folk yet. There's no stratification for what are the actual issues we're talking about. So this would really just be the beginning of a methodology to gather the information, understand the costs of serving one kind of patient versus another, which is then offered to the CCOs to apply in their own unique way. So it'd be their choice, but they have no way to get their arms around these folk right now, and they're incredibly complex, costly people to serve.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, Senators, there have been a variety of pilot projects or efforts to better understand these complexities. The Central Oregon project that you've heard about has looked into this and has begun to get some very good data. Central City Concern is working with CARE Oregon and the Portland area and others on a very similar project. And this is the kind of data on these populations that could be plugged into a methodology that they could use. So I don't view it as we're imposing something on a CCO. Rather, it would be a body of information and some research that would be offered as a tool that they could then use to better understand which systems work best with these populations, what methodologies for reimbursement within the CCO might work best, what population should they focus on. Those are the types of areas that I think we need to have better data on, and that's really the goal of this effort.
Madam Chair?
Yes,
follow-up. Lines 14, develop a methodology for adjusting global budgets to take into account the factors that you're talking about. To me, that's language. The health authority becomes directive. You have a global budget, but you're going to have to spend it here in this way.
This line is what's making you think it means imposing. Is that correct? Am I hearing you correctly?
Well, that would be the one.
I hear what you're saying. That yes, I think it would be worthwhile changing the way it reads. You're right. It's really about. It's not adjusting the global budget. It's about adjusting the way payment is delivered for specific care. And within their global budget, they decide, you know, what they want, how they want to pay for that. But they need information earlier to understand what are the costs of the kind of care. What goes into treating a diabetic homeless schizophrenic versus a diabetic like me, for example? They're very different. And that's what's not even understood. So I certainly appreciate how you're reading that and can understand it. Yeah.
Because... the first part of the section starts, the Oregon Health Authority shall convene a work group to, and then lists all of these different things, which I think there is a subgroup working on these issues already with the health board.
There is?
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, at the end of the day, I think what we will find is that when you have seen one CCO, you have seen one CCO.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Senator Morris. There's some language in here that basically says the health authority, in my mind, it gives them, establish outcome measures and things like that, which are going to be different. The way treatment is delivered is not going to be the same everywhere, and we know that. I guess, and Madam Chair, you say this is a work group. I would also wonder if the health authority is worth its salt. I think this sort of stuff they'd be doing without us putting in statute them convening a work group. So.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Just a question real quickly. One of this work group came up with a process for establishing outcomes, a methodology for adjusting global budget, and a CCO, a particular CCO, didn't like what they were suggesting. I mean, is this going to be done in rule, or has it become rule somewhere along the line, or is this a suggestion of the OHA?
Chair Monis-Anderson, Senator Bates. No, it's a tool for them to use, and... research that helps inform their own decision making. This is really complex to figure it out. We've been working with Providence's Center for Outcomes Research and Education, and this is not simple. We've been talking for several months about methodology and approach, and so it's really what we are hoping to do is, I think Senator Cruz is correct that eventually this will be done. We're trying to jumpstart it because we feel it's so significant for achieving health outcomes, achieving health equities, and bending the cost curve. And obviously, these are our clients too. So you know, there's reason that we are carrying this bill.
Okay, yes.
Madam Chair, I'd offer if I might.
Yes.
We've been asking for outcomes on mental health and drug and alcohol treatment for 15 or 20 years.
Yeah,
and they're really
25.
Maybe 25. And it's a hard thing to measure, and no one knows for sure how to do it. And inside a CCO, once they're formed, we'll have a better chance of doing that. We'll have an opportunity to start looking at some cross-references, like admissions by an individual to a hospital, to an emergency room, which we never had before. It may be premature to be trying to do that before we start getting information in from the CCOs and from what we have now available to us, which is a broad range of actual patient interactions. We're getting all payer database, which can tell us a lot more about things than we used to know. In Central Oregon, they've actually started identifying patients who are using the ERs heavily, which they never had before.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of measures we're going to have. I'm just not sure that this is a little bit premature, and I still worry about what the local CCOs think when they form up and OHA says this is the way we're going to go, or try to. I don't know. It's just a little vague.
Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I noticed that the fiscal impact is zero, which would imply to me that OHA is already working in this arena, and that otherwise there would be a fairly significant expenditure impact, because you're talking about a major research effort to pull all this information together.
They have an opinion. I don't know.
Am I assuming correctly?
That's what I would assume, and I know the reason I had hoped maybe we could send it at least to Ways and Means to keep this topic in the forefront, to make sure that CCOs know that they have to maybe do healthcare delivery a little bit differently than a regular MCO, in that there are these people who fall through the cracks due to psychological or social barriers. And so I can tell from the will of the committee that we will not be going into work session, but that I think this is an extremely important concept, and we have to have due diligence in 2013 when we have reports back from the CCOs that this is these people are most vulnerable, are being taken care of, and CCOs have developed a system of dealing with them.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I know in Douglas County all the right players are at the table and that's the first place they're looking at is the high utilizers in the system, which it does encompass a large portion of these. You know, one of the signals we're trying to send out is that this is the bottom-up approach, and I would like to see at least a year's worth of data and have the CCOs inform OHA of the proper way to do it rather than the other way around. And I'm just not sure, quite honestly, because we're dealing with a massive amount of trust issues, both among the players at the local level and between the local level and the state level. And the signals we're sending on the front end of this thing are, I think, really, really critical. And I'm not diminishing the importance of this. I'm just wondering where it needs to start, and we're telling our local folks is it starts with you. You figure it out, and so. But
this is the heart of the problem.
There's no question. It's just what is the best way to deal with it. So.
Further discussion. That I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1522. Thank you very much. Colleagues, we have two House bills.
Two whole bills?
Two House bills.
Wow.
And I was hoping that we could hear both of them on Wednesday, so maybe we wouldn't meet on Friday, but the people who have the bill can't meet on Wednesday, but they can meet on Friday.
That's true.
And there are two bills. Sorry about that. And the last day we can post is?
Well, our next chamber deadline is a week from today.
Is that isn't the last?
That's the 20th. All the second chamber bills have to be done on the 20th. On the 21st, which is Tuesday, we don't meet on Tuesday.
So we've only gotten two bills so far.
Right.
So we probably will have to meet on Friday anyway in case we get some more bills, if we do. But if we only have two...
We can have a long day on Monday.
We'll have a very long day on Monday. So,
Madam Chair, yes. I have no problem with long days on Mondays. I do have a problem with short evenings on Fridays. I got to get a four-hour drive.
Oh, no, you do.
Okay, mm-hmm. And I don't mean to make it about me, but yeah. This 3 to 5 stuff on Fridays for all of us is a huge problem. I'd much rather work late on a Monday night There's no Monday Night Football right now, so it's late in the morning.
That's true. We got Monday's free.
Then I would on Friday. So I would ask you, as a special favor to me, although nobody else's committee cares, that we think about working late on Monday. And we'll have more bills too.
I will have to wait to see how many bills we're going to get make that decision. But I'll be talking with you. But it is a possibility that... When do you have to post?
Well, we have the floor on Friday.
24 hours. We're on the 24-hour post.
I just hate to post for one bill on Wednesday. I just really do.
I can't imagine this Saturday we're going to...
And we don't have any informational hearings, correct, at this point.
I think that's real pressing.
They're going to have 16. I told you that already.
All right. Colleagues and public, please stay tuned as to when we're going to meet next. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I didn't, you know.